The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. Live in the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on Chai FM.
Good morning, Anthony Reich. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you, Kathy. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Anthony, a big story making news headlines across the world this morning is that the United States has decided to scale down its involvement in Syria and withdraw its forces. So that kind of leaves, you know, ally Israel alone in the neighborhood.
Sort of, yeah. First of all, before we even get into this, apologies if there's noise and banging in the background. We're having thunderstorms and rainstorms and kind of real wintry weather at the moment. So on the one hand, it's a little annoying. On the other hand, we desperately need the rain. So I hope that it won't be too disturbing in the background. But just in terms of the U.S. and its involvement in Syria, I don't know that everybody really knew that the U.S. was kind of involved in Syria. It wasn't such an obvious thing. But apparently the U.S. had something like 2,000 troops in Syria, actually physically stationed in Syria, although most of the work, most of the attacking that was done by the U.S. in Syria was done by aircraft that was flown in from U.S. bases in the Gulf, from the bases that they have then from the aircraft that are stationed out there, either from aircraft carriers or from some of the bases that they actually have on the ground in the Gulf. And it seems as if, though, now the U.S. will be withdrawing at least these 2,000 troops. The reason that the U.S. had their troops there and the reason that the U.S. was undertaking its activities was part of this coalition against ISIS or IS, against Islamic State. That was really the main reason that the U.S. was active in the Syrian area, was to try to somehow weaken Islamic State. And it's noticeable that in his announcement that the U.S. will effectively be withdrawing from Syria, U.S. President Donald Trump has said the war against ISIS has been won. And therefore, the U.S. has done its job and will effectively be withdrawing its troops. Now, I think that most of us who are following stories in Syria, and particularly about ISIS, will understand that the war against ISIS remains.
Yes.
ISIS is not beaten by any stretch of the imagination. What we're seeing is that perhaps the previous incarnation of ISIS is over, and what we're seeing is that a lot of the resources and the people and the arms that were part of the ISIS organization have now been spread out to other various renegade groups, various other organizations. The work that ISIS was doing in order to try to destroy Western culture as we know it is not over, has not gone away, and will continue. So this notion that the war against ISIS has been won, I think, is a little misleading and perhaps conceals the fact that the reason that the U.S. is really withdrawing its troops is more for economic reasons than anything else. But I think the people that I feel most sorry for in all of this are really the Kurds, because the U.S. has been involved in a coalition which has supported the Kurds in that Kurdish area in Syria and has been part of some sort of Syrian National Front, it's been called, which has been really reinforcing the Kurdish position in Syria and across the border into Turkey. And so by withdrawing, the U.S. effectively leaves the Kurds
unprotected.
Yeah, really on their own. And part of this this militia, this group that was called the Syrian Democratic Forces, of which the U.S. was part and the Kurds were part and there were various other other groups part of this, will effectively be left in the lurch now as the U.S. withdraws. So I think the big winners in all of this will certainly be Turkey, who has been for the longest time wanting to be much more active against the Kurds, much more violent, if you like. They really wanted to undertake activities against the Kurds, but they've been prevented from doing so by the U.S. involvement. So Turkey is certainly a big winner. I think Iran is a big winner in all of this, because the space that will be left when the U.S. withdraws its troops will almost certainly be filled by Iranian troops. And I think that Russia is a big winner in all of this, because, of course, the Russian position in Syria is reinforced even further as a result of the decision by the U.S. To withdraw its troops. So it's all going to be very, very interesting. They always say that when you put foreign forces into a faraway country, the most difficult part is withdrawing those forces. And I think that President Trump has decided that now is the time to do it with the least possible damage being caused. There is never such a thing as a withdrawal without damage. There will always be people who are let down. There will always be groups that have been supported by you who will feel that they've been left in the lurch. So this is a big deal for the U.S. And I think that President Trump has undertaken an interesting exercise now. We all remember Vietnam, and we all remember Iran and Iraq, and we all remember various other U.S. involvements in places around the world and how difficult it is to pull their troops out. So this is it now. Israel, of course, will respond accordingly, as Prime Minister Netanyahu has said. I don't think that Israel will be significantly weakened by this, even though it was a very nice thing for Israel to have the U.S. troops across the border. So I think that Israel is just going to have to be a lot more active than has been the case up until now, where the U.S. has really done perhaps some of the dirty work on behalf of Israel, allowed Israel to perhaps take a slightly back seat, if that's the right word, even though Israel has been pretty active. But I think going forward, as a result of this U.S. withdrawal, we're probably going to see much greater activity on Israel's part across the Syrian border.
And do you think that the U.S. would ever get involved again if, Bashar al-Assad, who was, making these chemical attacks on his people, nothing's really changed with him.
No.
Isn't
and I
that
think,
one
to
of the
be
reasons
fair, that he's
that
also a big winner in all of this?
Yeah.
Nothing has changed. And to be fair, even when the U.S. did undertake activities against him, when he used these chemical weapons, it didn't really deter him from using them again, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even though, he did suffer some consequences, he didn't seem to be nervous or think twice about perhaps using the chemical weapons again. So I don't know that really was very effective as a deterrent to him using chemical weapons. And I'm sure that if the situation arose again, that he would do the same again. So he's certainly also one of the winners now as a result of the U.S. decision to withdraw its troops.
Anthony, let's move on. Israel is bracing itself for a number of substantial price rises at the start of next year. So what has led to these price rises?
Well, it's really difficult to know exactly what's led to the price rises. And in fairness, Israel has suffered very, very low inflation in recent years, even sometimes negative inflation. And so even the latest inflationary numbers have shown a decrease in the CPI and the consumer price index rather than an increase. But the start of January apparently is going to be the moment when everything absolutely goes haywire on the economic front in terms of price rises. And just to summarize, some of the organizations that have already braced the consumers for price rises, we're expecting municipal rates to go up around 2%. We're expecting food prices to go up between 2 and 4.5%. We're expecting the price of water to go up 4.5%. We're expecting the price of electricity to go up anywhere between 4 and 8%, depending on where you live and how much you use. We're expecting car insurance to go up by 7%, mobile phone costs between 10 and 15%. There's even toilet paper on the list that's apparently going to go up by 10%. That's a dramatic thing. Soft drinks, 3 to 4%, dairy products, 3.5%. So there's just this huge chain of all kinds of price rises that have come into the market, and food companies in particular have come under a lot of pressure. And this has resulted in protests, so-called yellow vest protests, along the lines of what we've been seeing across France, where people have donned these yellow vests and come out in economic protest against government's plans and the inflation that people have suffered in France. And in France, it was really driven a lot by the fuel prices more than anything else. In fact, in Israel, we've seen a reduction in fuel price rather than anything else. But people are saying that, this is as a result of exchange rate fluctuations, as a result of the shekel perhaps becoming a little bit weaker, where people are buying in things from abroad. Overall, the exact reason for all of these price increases are not clear. Everybody comes up with their own little story. But I think the bottom line is, unfortunately, that the Israeli price of cost of living is going to go up even more than has been the case up until now. And even until now, the cost of living in Israel is considered to be one of the highest in the world, unfortunately. And of course, all these price rises are coming exactly in the middle of winter, particularly the electricity price, when people are using, you know, electricity to keep warm and to keep away from the winter. So there are major concerns about the weaker elements of Israeli society being hit as a result of these price rises. We'll have to keep an eye on it. We do know that, for example, Tnuva has decided that they're going to, Osem has decided that they're not going to increase their prices as much as was originally the case. The Yellow Vest protests have been targeting Tnuva as well, another Israeli food company. But really, January is going to be, I think, a very, very difficult economic month in Israel.
How do young people studying manage this? I mean, if I think, my daughter and her husband are like a typical, they're a typical young couple. You know, they are renting an apartment. He studies during the day, works at night. I mean, you know, she's working. That's just to make ends meet. That's not, you know, there's no recreation in there. It's a very, very difficult thing for young people.
Very, very difficult for young people indeed. And I think that we find, you know, young people having to be very innovative and very industrious in order to put themselves through their studies while making ends meet. The situation that you've described with young people who are both studying and working at the same time is a very, very common and typical situation. I know that young people in South Africa are quite accustomed to going to university full time and not having to worry about paying the bills. Generally speaking, their parents support them or whatever they're able to do. In Israel, that's much, much less likely to be the case. When people go to university, even if they're studying full time, they inevitably have night jobs or weekend jobs or whatever they have in order to try to make ends meet, to put things together. And in some cases, as you've described, people are working full time and studying in the evening rather than the other way around in order just to get by. And of course, the big issue, which has been a big issue for years and years and years now, is how young people like that get themselves onto the property ladder, with the property prices being as high as they have been. And there's been a lot of focus on trying to build areas of slightly lower cost for young couples who are trying to get onto the property ladder. Those endeavors have been have had mixed success, I would say. In some cases, they've been relatively successful. In other cases, you know, this so-called young couples area, which has been designated in certain towns and cities around Israel, has really turned out to be quite expensive relative to what young couples can afford. And so it hasn't been particularly successful. But it is certainly a tough thing to go through. And unfortunately, parents are being called upon to help their children. And not all parents are in a position to be able to do so.
Very interesting. Anthony Reich, I really did want to talk to you about this International Criminal Court, but maybe we can have this discussion, I don't know, Monday.
On Monday. Yeah, it'll still be a story on Monday. This is definitely the appointment of the Palestinian official to the advisory committee, which selects judges for the International Criminal Court. That's an interesting story. So let's talk about it on Monday. And we still haven't forgotten our discussion about the two-state, three-state, one-state solution, which will roll off, you know, will roll into next week as well. So, you know, we're working all of next week as usual, no holiday time for us. So, you know, we can keep the discussions going, absolutely no issues.
Anthony Reich, wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very, very much. Enjoy the weather, enjoy the storms, and lots of rain and lots of blessing for Israel.
Amen. Thanks. Thank you very much. I wish you guys a good Shabbat, Shabbat Shalom, a great weekend, a nice break. And I look forward to talking to you on Monday as usual.
Thank you so much. God bless. Bye-bye.